Tanto Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Watch Dogs Legion, Day Zero, by James Swallow and Josh Reynolds, narrated by Sam Cousy. Day 5, Sunday. Bagley, Bytes 13654-9. Things are popping in old London town, gang. To wit, the following events of note. Sky Larson, futurist and weirdo du jour, has published yet another toe-and-deaf essay in the Gruniad, arguing that really, you'll all be better off if you just let her stick a CTOS chip in your brains. It is to laugh. Oh wait, another thing I can't do. Sad. Fake news. Here's something that's not news. CCTV feeds have clocked a white transit van at multiple unscheduled, unlogged stops across the city, including Blackfriars Bridge. Nothing suspicious there. On an unrelated note, there's a lot of internal chatter up and down the Albion frequencies. I wonder what our favourite paramilitary contractor is up to. Does anyone recognise the term Libra? No? Moving on. And something familiar. The Met is getting a lot of reports of foul doings and black deeds in the Whitechapel terminus. Show of hands. Who's surprised? Please put your hand down, Terry. You're embarrassing us both. Possible involvement of Clan Kelly has been mentioned. Sergey, be a chum and get on that. Speaking of Whitechapel, our favourite Labour MP, Sarah Lincoln, is giving an unnecessary speech on community unity at Lister House later today, when everyone would much rather be watching the footy. Be sure to give the crowd a scan, Hannah. You never know who might prove sufficiently disaffected and useful. And finally, we have the best for last. According to Al Dalton, it looks as if MI5 is experiencing some political blowback from the Newcastle incident. My heart would bleed if I had one. 1. Brick Lane. Ollie Soames hit Brick Lane at top speed, letting the bicycle's momentum carry him along. He wove through the midday market crowd with an ease that was down to experience and a total lack of concern for traffic safety laws. As he pedalled, he reached into his pocket and thumbed the screen of his optic R, waking it up. Linked to a tiny electronic device implanted just in front of his ear, the handset was networked to GPS, and through it he called up a retinal overlay of the borough. The digital map unspooled across his field of vision. He barely noticed it these days, though it had taken some practice to get used to riding with it. He blink-scrolled through the pop-up advertisements, tapping in his destination as he skidded and thumped along the pavement, leaving a trail of startled curses in his wake. Not everyone appreciated Ollie's skillful navigation, and more than one piece of fruit bounced off the back of the canvas bag slung across his back. He ignored them. He had bigger worries than a badly aimed Satsuma. He was late. Not the fashionable kind of late either, but the other kind. The one that meant that he'd screwed up. Again. It wasn't his fault. He had an excuse. But excuses only counted if the other person was willing to listen. Ollie doubted his handler was the understanding sort, given their encounters to date. He bent low over the handlebars, urging the bike to greater speed. The optic handset in his pocket hummed, and a congestion warning flashed on his display. He veered down a blind alley, hoping to avoid a traffic jam. He bounced off the pavement and along a parallel road, seeking the path of least resistance. News feeds flickered at the corner of his eye. London was playing host to a big technology conference this week. That explained all the security drones in the air overhead. Ollie had it on good authority that most of them were run by a pair of bored plods in an air-conditioned box at New Scotland Yard. A boggin saloon pulled out of a side street, horn blaring as he arrowed towards it. He kicked the front wheel up and went up and over the hood of the car. He nearly bit his tongue as he came down hard on the pavement. He kept the bike upright, but only just. From behind Ollie came a cry of, "Wanker!" There was no way he hadn't scratched the paint. Ollie couldn't bring himself to feel too bad about it. What did the guy expect? Driving in London on a Sunday? He tossed two fingers over his shoulder, but kept his face forward. Ollie knew CCTV cameras were tracking him, but that didn't mean much if no one was paying attention on the other end of the feed. As far as they knew, he was just another asshole delivery driver. That was fine by him, and if he needed to, there were a few tricks he could play to make identification all but impossible. Electronic eyes could be fooled as easily as flesh and blood ones, if you knew the trick. He flicked the optic screen again, activating a preset command. It sent out a coded data stream, scrambling the CCTV feeds in his immediate area for a few seconds. A rainbow of curry houses and fashionable graffiti streaked past on either side of him. He angled the bike, skidding around the corner, startling a dog walker and nearly tagging a concrete bollard. Barks and yelps pursued him down the street. His optic was buzzing, but he ignored it. Whatever it was, it could wait. He was close, maybe close enough. Maybe he wasn't late after all. Maybe, 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 the mantra went around and around in his head. This was his last chance. If he screwed up this time, that was it. He was done. The thought made him queasy. The feeling only got worse when he reached his destination. The alley was a little hook of space, caught between two buildings. A piece of old London folded into the new city and forgotten, like a scar you barely remembered getting. A gloomy stretch of cobbles and pavement, lined with rubbish. The walls were plastered with old theatre handbills, posters for funk bands, and decades of overlapping tags. Neon swirls of spray paint intersected with mimeographed flyers and tattered advertisements for loft shares. He hadn't bothered to ask why the handoff was taking place here. There was probably a good reason, but they weren't going to tell him. Answers only came with trust, and he was all too aware that he hadn't earned either yet. And anyway, a good delivery driver knew better than to ask about things like that. It didn't matter what was in the package, so long as it got to where it was going on time and intact. He brought the bike to a screeching stop. A rat pelted into the rubbish, its squeaks echoing against the bricks. Daylight sifted down past the edges of the rooftops above. He climbed off the bike and wheeled it towards the end of the alley, heart thumping. If she'd already left, he'd never hear the end of it. "You're late," a voice said to his left. The voice and its owner were posh. Too posh for this part of London, but he kept that to himself. "Traffic, yeah?" He turned. She was young, his age, maybe a little older. Dressed professionally, black hijab and an optic audio bud in her ear. Cute. She reminded him of someone famous, a TV chef, he thought, though he couldn't bring a name to mind. He considered doing an image search, then thought better of it. "Hannah Shah?" She quirked an eyebrow. "If I wasn't, I wouldn't tell you." He shrugged. Fair enough. They'd warned him that she'd be nervous. In her shoes, he'd be bloody terrified. Data crawled across his vision. The hacked facial recognition software installed in his optic gave him everything about her, including shoe size, gave new meaning to the phrase open book. His feed pinged, and he knew she was trying the same. Ollie wished her luck. He'd spent several long sleepless nights online shaping his data profile into something innocuous and uninformative. Hers was far more interesting. Hannah Shah, third generation British Bengali, personal assistant to Sarah Lincoln, newly elected Labour MP for Tower Hamlets South. "Bit off your patch, aren't you?" he asked with a smile and made a vague gesture. "Limehouse is over that way, Miss Shah." She frowned. "It's a free city, for the moment at least." "That's why we're here," he said. "Got the what's it?" "How do I know you're the one I'm supposed to hand it over to? If I wasn't, I wouldn't tell you," he said. He tried for a cheeky grin, but from her expression he could tell it hadn't worked. She stared at him, and he restrained the urge to squirm. "Look, I'm not Albion, if that's what you're worried about." "I wasn't, but I'm starting to." Her stare didn't waver. He stared back and suddenly remembered the passphrase. He slapped his forehead in embarrassment. "Bugger, Red Queen says, off with their heads." "A bit late for that," she said, her tone dubious. He didn't blame her, but even so, he was annoyed. It wasn't his fault, was it? He wasn't the one who'd insisted on meeting in a dark alley like something out of a bad movie. He wasn't the one who'd insisted on bullshit codes when they could just have sent encrypted pings to each other's optics. "I forgot," he said defensively. When she didn't reply, he turned his bike about. "I'll leave then, shall I?" He tried to sound unconcerned. "No skin off mine," he added, which wasn't strictly true. But no need for her to know that. "Wait," she began. He paused, saying nothing. After a moment, she sighed. "Here." She extended a folded A5 envelope. Inside was something small, a flash drive, he thought. But he wasn't so new at this as to open it and check. Not in front of her. Even so, he hesitated. He knew enough about this sort of thing to know what she was probably risking, meeting him like this. "You know, you might get in big trouble for this." "Only if you get caught," she said softly. "So, for both our sakes, don't get caught." "Wasn't planning on it." He stuffed the envelope into his vest for safekeeping. "Ta, love. Be seeing you." He was on his bike a moment later and gone 3 seconds after that. He didn't look back. Hannah Shah aimed herself towards Whitechapel, flicking through urgent emails on her optic display as she walked. It was Sunday, but that didn't mean the work stopped coming. Besides, it was a good distraction. A police car sped past, siren blaring. There were more police on the streets than she could ever recall seeing before. Something was in the air. She thought it might have to do with the Toan conference later in the week. The Technology of All Nations conference was big news. A sign of London's resurgence, some claimed. Privately, Hannah had her doubts. Around her, boutique shops and hipster joints stretched for what seemed like miles. Tradition warred with gentrification in Tower Hamlets, and the latter was winning. There was no money for anything these days, but work was being done nonetheless, mostly by foreign concerns. London had been sliding towards international irrelevance for years, and no one wanted to admit it. And if that meant inviting in certain elements, so be it. Elements like Albion. She still felt queasy about handing off the data. Krish had vouched for the courier, and he'd matched the profile in her face recognition program, but only just. It was as if he'd never used social media or had a photo taken. Other than an e-fit she'd managed to dig up on her own initiative, it wasn't a good likeness, but it was close enough. The suspect had briefly hacked the systems of several newly deployed automated shelf-stacking robots in an upmarket grocery store, turning them into thieves, two for the shelf, one for the bot. There was no information on what happened to the stolen items, though there was an attached note that implied the items had been distributed on several local food banks by anonymous donors. Oliver Soames, Ollie to his mates, had been questioned during the course of the investigation, but nothing had come of it. That was the extent of his history. One brief mention in a police file, now closed and forgotten. Hannah could practically smell the industrial strength bleach. Someone had scrubbed Ollie from the system. It was that lack of information that had decided her in the end. If Ollie Soames wasn't dead sec, he was doing a good impression. Suddenly nervous, she adjusted her hijab. Maybe he wasn't dead sec. Maybe he was Albion. An illicit tracker program alerted her to the presence of numerous security drones overhead. More than one might normally see for a Sunday morning. Maybe they were cracking down on unlicensed stalls at the market, or maybe they were following her. She wove along the pavement, instinctively avoiding the drone sweeps as best she could. Her record was spotless, but there was no sense taking any more chances, especially if someone found out what she'd done. It had been a calculated risk, but what else could she have done? Albion was dangerous. Not everyone agreed, her boss for one. She saw Albion as an opportunity. As such, she'd ordered Hannah to construct a complete dossier on the company, everything from hiring practices to financials. Whatever she could find, however seemingly insignificant. Unfortunately, there wasn't much available. But what was there was terrifying. One of the world's leading private military contractors, Albion, was looking to expand into privatized law enforcement. They wanted the UK to be their test market for long-term urban deployment and pacification, starting with London. A foothold in the city was as good as a boot on the throat of the rest of the country. If they succeeded in getting the contract, they'd have no accountability and little to no oversight. A paramilitary force occupying what was left of the United Kingdom. The thought wasn't a pleasant one. Luckily for Hannah, DedSec agreed, or at least she hoped they did. It was hard to tell from the outside what DedSec actually wanted at any given time. At first, she'd thought they were just one more hacker collective out to cause trouble. These days, she knew better. DedSec had a plan. But what that plan was, she wasn't sure, save that it was aimed at making life a bit better for everyone. And that including stopping Albion from setting up shop in London, or so Krish had assured her. She smiled at the thought. When she'd known him, he'd been just another kid, looking to play rap artist. Now he was, what, a hacktivist? Part of the resistance. Power to the people and all that. And today, so was she. Her proximity alerts flashed and she looked up. News drones were circling like carrion birds. Whitechapel had become a focal point of interest lately. Albion had been given limited remit to ply their trade in Tower Hamlets, while the government debated the merits of extending and expanding their current contract. That, in turn, had the locals more agitated than ever, especially when word got out that Albion was looking to buy up properties and convert them into operation centres for their London spearhead. Whitechapel's council estates had been on the cusp of demolition for years, including Lister House, the one her boss was visiting today, and the one earmarked to be the first Albion barracks. Lister House had escaped the council's plans for gentrification more than once over the years, and you could practically set your watch by the protests. Hannah didn't blame them. There wasn't anywhere for them to go if the estate got bulldozed. Unfortunately for them, despite her public image, Sarah Lincoln couldn't have cared less. In fact, Hannah suspected that she was all in favour of her current constituency being replaced with a lighter-coloured, well-heeled variety. Sarah would have denied it, but after several years together, Hannah knew how Sarah's mind worked. Sarah Lincoln had a plan too, and she would happily step over anyone and everyone to make sure that plan went off without a hitch. Not that the MP for Tower Hamlet South hadn't done some good on her to climb to the top. But it was all incidental, the equivalent of a queen dispensing sweetmeats to her pets. A generous queen, but a queen nonetheless. Hannah hadn't noticed it at first. She'd been too busy. Being a PA for a member of parliament, even a junior member, meant she was on call all hours. And Sarah could be very charming, even friendly, when she wanted to be. But there was steel under the silk. For all that, she'd been born in the borough. She didn't seem to care what happened to the people that lived there, so long as it didn't make her look bad. And the people had started to notice. That was why they'd come out today. Why she'd had the chance to make the drop-off. A recalled petition was doing the rounds, and Sarah had been on it like a tiger on a tethered goat. She'd arranged for an ad hoc town hall meeting to quiet the grumblers, to reassure them that they weren't going to be forcibly ejected from their homes, at least not yet. The real issue, from Hannah's point of view, was that Sarah hadn't yet made up her mind about whether she was supporting the Albion deal or not. If she did, the borough and her constituency would see major changes, and perhaps a great deal of economic growth. In return, they only had to sell their soul. Her optic buzzed as it automatically synced with that of her employer. She looked up. The council flats of Lister House and its neighbour, Treves House, were modernist buildings rising out of a sad patch of green space. One was a long row of terraces, the other a tall block with clean lines and proportions, but both were looking decidedly shabby these days. The local council wavered between benign neglect and outright hostility, and tenants and leaseholders had been facing imminent eviction for almost 30 years. Trees and hedges set behind black iron fences marked the boundaries of the estate, and cars lined the streets. People were already gathering in the common area between blocks of flats, waiting to hear what their MP had to say for herself. Sarah's black Brubeck town car was parked just off sight and out of range. Hannah skirted the crowd, threaded through an unobtrusive security cordon, and made her way to the vehicle. She climbed into the back, where Lincoln sat in air-conditioned comfort, flicking through feeds on her high-end, rose-gold optic. "You're late," the MP said, not looking up from her device. "I thought I was going to have to do this without you." "I'm sorry," Hannah paused. "That must have been traumatic for you." Sarah snorted but didn't look up. "Careful, I might take offense and fire you." Hannah wasn't unduly worried. "You won't. 5 personal assistants in as many years, people might draw the wrong conclusions." "Fair point. What do you think of this Toan business? We haven't RSVP'd." "Good. I can't think of anything more stultifying than attending a technology conference." Her eyes flicked up and she shifted subjects again. "What was so important you had to go all the way to Brick Lane?" "Meeting a friend," Hannah said. She was used to Sarah's abrupt switches of tack. Her boss did this intentionally, so as to discomfit people. Knowing this, Hannah had rehearsed the story in front of a mirror. Before Sarah could ask, she added, "She works for Natter." Lincoln's eyes flicked up. "And why, pray tell, were you talking to someone who works for the Honourable Representative of Tower Hamlets North?" she purred. Hannah hid a smile. She'd known mentioning the other MP's name would provoke the right reaction. Winston Natter was second generation, like Sarah, though his parents were from Calcutta rather than Dasmarib. Despite that, they had more in common than not. Something Sarah didn't like to be reminded of. "Word is, Natter is throwing his weight behind the Albion deal," she said. Sarah sat up, nearly colliding with the roof of the town car. She was a tall woman, taller than Hannah, taller than most men, especially when wearing heels, which she did as often as possible. lean and honed, wearing clothes that cost more than most of her constituency made in a year. She could have been a runaway model in her youth. Her hair was tightly bound in a bun at the back of her head. She slid her optic into her jacket pocket and looked down her nose at her assistant. What did he say? He thinks they're doing a, and I quote, sterling bloody job in Tower Hamlets. Sarah frowned. You know that for sure? 70%, Hannah said. She had to be careful. Sarah wasn't stupid. Even if she wanted to believe the worst of Natter, she'd be looking for independent confirmation. Not good enough, Sarah said with a slight smile. Though I wouldn't pull it past the little weasel. He'd privatize oxygen if he could get away with it. She paused, one hand on the door release. Still, it might be something to keep in mind. If Natter's for it, that means all the wrong people will be gunning for him. Hannah relaxed. I thought you'd want to know. Sarah laughed softly. If politics doesn't work out, you might have a career in espionage. She opened the door and slid out of the town car. Come on, I can hear our constituents growling. Let's get this whack-owl of a day started. 2. Whitechapel. Ollie was moving quick, keeping one eye on his display. According to his optic, it was 12 minutes to Limehouse. Experience told him it was more like 20, depending on traffic on Valence Road. He veered onto the pavement. Away from the cramped confines of Brick Lane, he could see the Parcel Fox courier drones swooping like clumsy pigeons. The drones were the reason he was barely holding on to his job at the moment. They accomplished the same tasks he could in half the time and didn't need paying. Soon enough, everyone would be using the damn things, and then where would he be? Right back where he had been before he'd lucked into this job, before DedSec. He thought about Hannah. Was she DedSec too? Impossible to know. He could ask, but he could just imagine the answer. Best not to risk it. Hard not to be curious, though. He'd always been curious, taking things apart to see how they worked. Phones, computers, televisions. As a kid, he'd fancied being a repairman. Times changed, and you had to change with them, or get buried. London was learning that the hard way. Ollie braked hard, narrowly avoiding the barricade. Lots of barricades in Tower Hamlets these days, after the redundancy riots. Lots of protests, mostly about immigration. The city, the country, was like a pot left too long on a lit hob. It hadn't boiled over yet, but it wouldn't be long. He wasn't looking forward to it. He'd been in nappies when things started unravelling, and it hadn't gotten any better since. When it came time to divvy up the haves and the have-nots, he was definitely the latter. But when things got bad, it was always the have-nots who got the wrong end of the stick. Money was tight and getting tighter. Crappy as his job was, he was lucky to have it. Most of his peers couldn't say the same. The ones who weren't dealing for Clan Kelly or one of the smaller syndicates were working part-time at the local chippy or on the dole. He hopped the bike over a cracked curb, scattering pedestrians. A courier drone shot past him, raggling its fans in an almost taunting manner. He longed to catch up with it and knock it out of the air, but that would only attract the wrong type of attention, no matter how good it might feel. Then, it was that sort of thing that had gotten DedSec to notice him in the first place. Thankfully, they'd gotten to him before the police. Sometimes he wondered if there'd even been police on him, or if that was just what he'd been told. DedSec needed recruits, and they weren't shy about playing dirty to get them. Maybe that was just the way of it. If you weren't on one side, you were on the other. Whether you knew it or not. All in all, he preferred to be on his bike. He took a turn, weaving along a cut across.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?